It's spoiler in time, my friends. And if you're new, welcome. This show takes all the hard work we do on Cord Killers, learning how to watch things, and applies that. This is applied science, this show. We actually watch things and then talk about them. We are going to talk about Westworld, episode 9 of season 2, the penultimate episode. And Brian Brushwood is gone. So instead, we're going to talk with Brian Pushbroom about his favorite sweeping shows.
My favorite sweeping shows are Wife Sweep and Trading Swiffers.
I thought it was going to be a DIY network show, but apparently not. Instead, maybe Bryce and I will talk about Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City on Netflix.
I went and watched all the big moments from this series again. I've got a list. We're going to go through all of the great big goods, the bads. It's going to be great.
So Brian will be back next week. We will pick up from where we left off on Deadwood next week. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, let's check in on the movie draft.
Movie draft.
I'm screwed.
Are you screwed, Tom?
I think I'm screwed. So Team DTNS is sitting on $736 million. Hereditary has got $27 million. Breaking In has $45 million. And Avengers Infinity War, $664 million. That seems to be leveling out. I mean, maybe it gets close to $750 but probably not going to go past that. I think all these movies have pretty much reached their peak. John Trucker has been the team that we've been talking about for the past few weeks as the best chance to take number one. They have Mission Impossible, Fallout, and Incredibles 2. So it kind of depended how they did. Well, opening weekend for Incredibles 2 was $182 million.
The record for an opening weekend for an animated movie.
Yeah, which is what they needed.
Yeah.
And they got it.
Do you think, is it enough? Isn't it? Because they still need Fallout to do well.
Well, listen, Team John Trekker, not to discount Team Cord Killers at $432 million. They are in second place. Solo A Star Wars Story is probably going to finish just above $200 million for them. Mm-hmm. But Team Cord Killers only has Replicas left.
I don't even know Replicas. I don't even know that movie, Tom.
They're not going to make more than they have now.
Yeah.
Essentially. So that leaves Team John Trekker at $389 million after this weekend, meaning they only have to make $400 million, just shy of $400 million, really, maybe $370 million, in order to assure that they'll be in front of Team DTNS, which, as I said, is kind of peaked at $736. Mm-hmm. That means that between Mission Impossible Fallout and the first Purge,
sure,
and the rest of Incredibles 2, that feels like they could make a couple hundred million out of Mission Impossible and probably another 200 million out of Incredibles 2 and be done.
Another 200 out of Incredibles 2, you think?
Oh yeah. This week is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which is not getting good reviews.
Right.
And if you're a family and you're like, should we see the dinos or the Incredibles 2? You're likely going to pick Incredibles 2 again. Like, I may be exaggerating with them hitting 200 million more, but I think they end up hitting 300 million total, which then means Mission Impossible Fallout just needs to hit close to 200 million, and First Purge makes up the difference.
Well, you know, it's gonna rely on Fallout being huge, big numbers, because I mean, First Purge is gonna do pennies, but that's a lot to place on one movie. I think it's a good movie to try it. And take that chance on, but if it'll be close, however it goes,
we will know in 2 weeks. First of all, how bad Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom is going to be, because it's got dinos, it's going to make a lot of money. But the question is it going to make $182 million money, or is it going to make $60 million money, $70 million money? Yeah. Probably somewhere between those. That's going to tell the tale for Team Night Attack for sure. And we'll see what Incredibles 2 does in its week 2. Once we've seen Incredibles 2 out for a couple of weeks, that'll give us an idea of what Mission Impossible has to make, and then it all becomes clear.
Do you think Tell It Anyway has a chance with Ant-Man and the Wasp? I know Ant-Man is not going to be Avengers 3 money, but What if it
is? Okay, so Tell It Anyway is at $294 million. They'll need to make at least $436 million out of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Uncle Drew, and Crazy Rich Asians. I just don't see that happening.
I think if Ant-Man and the Wasp is big enough, I don't think it will. I don't think it will. But I think it could happen. I think there's a chance people decide that they like. I am not excited by Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I'm looking at it this way. Uncle Drew and Crazy Rich Asians probably make up $100 million between them at best case scenario. Mm. So then Ant-Man and the Wasp has to make $336 million. When you're seeing Deadpool 2 sitting at $294, I just don't see Ant-Man and the Wasp beating that.
Even though Avengers is $664 right now? Yeah. Even though it has a ton of Marvel heat?
Maybe. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I just don't. I'm not feeling it.
But you're saying it's a Mission Impossible fallout.
Probably there's going to be some fallout from my comments when Ant-Man and the Wasp does an opening weekend of $300 million.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll see in a couple of weeks. Well, this coming week is Jurassic Park, so we'll at least have... opening weekend for that.
Yep.
And I think that'll at least decide Night Attack's fate.
All right, let's move on to spoilering Westworld, the Father's Day episode.
Do you think they planned it for this?
I wonder.
Right?
I actually didn't really even think about it until Eileen tweeted Happy Father's Day and a picture of William.
Yeah.
That aside, I really like this episode, almost in some reason for the same reasons as the last episode, which is we got a lot more insight into William, especially older William, and his history without feeling like I didn't progress in the story. We still saw Dolores getting close to the Valley Beyond. We found out what the Valley Beyond is, and Teddy offs himself, leaving Dolores alone.
Okay, so let's go down beat by beat. Let's start with William. In that, I am glad that we got to see his history, and though I think we still don't have a complete picture of him, right?
No.
So much of the issue of his daughter's issues are you're a liar, and so much of his wife's issues with him are you're a liar, and literally we don't know what that means exactly. But we did find out that William does have a technological connection or association with the park for his own purposes that we don't quite know, unless we are to believe that he is, but it's Delos who's the one that wants the human data.
Delos wants the human data for reasons that we're not exactly sure about.
Right.
William seems to be one of a group possibly who wants the data for immortality. And I can't tell if that's also what Delos wants it for, or because William is Delos, or if it was William's secret project, factions of Delos were like, yeah, but we could also use it to make all this money doing this other thing.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, because when the armed guards come, they say, oh, it's the boss.
Yeah.
And so that would make you think that he was on the same side as everyone else. But at
in which
same
case,
time,
though, why would he be trying to extract Dolores's father? And also trying to get to the Valley Beyond. Like,
right.
Why does he care about Ford's game? Like, I feel like there's weird, something else. There's some secret part of the project that he's after the rest of Delos doesn't know about.
And we also got hard data that William is a human being. Or rather, I think what it said is confirmed or something. So we're meant to believe.
Yeah, yeah.
We should believe William is a human.
Unless he's able to fool the test, he has passed the test that says he's a human. Also, he's nuts because he shoots his daughter because he didn't think something through. I mean, basically, she tells him about this profile that showed all the horrible things that he had done in Westworld.
Yeah. And he just assumed, no one knows about
that.
Like,
I never told my daughter about that.
Meanwhile,
and then didn't
he didn't
realize,
even
like,
keep it on him. It's one
she
thing if
could
he
could have found it, you know, just left it in a book.
I thought he was like, oh no, I have it right here. But no, he deliberately left it on the most important night of his life.
I'll just slip it in this book. Oh. No one will ever know it's there.
Oh my goodness.
It's a little bit cheesy, especially that she had it in her hand too. Like,
You should have said that. But it also gives us a little bit more of a direction with William's plot, in that this won't go unnoticed, I think. I think maybe not in the short term, but William's going to...
somebody's going to find the body, right?
Yeah, he's going to have to answer for these deaths.
I mean, the bodies. Obviously, the daughter would be the most sensational find, but he also killed a bunch of guards, too.
Yeah, and I don't know. Though, I could also see a world where they say, oh, no, those were Dolores's men, and they were playing the... Yeah. But that seems unlikely.
Seems unlikely to me too. We also learned that the Valley Beyond contains a simulation based on mind scans that happened in hats.
The hats thing was so stupid. Tom,
wait a minute.
Huh? And then puts it right back on.
And it puts it back on. Like what? Nobody ever took a hat off in this place.
It's like. I like the idea of like, conceptually, you could pick the white hat or the black hat. I never assumed that was the rigid, like, okay, you're going to pick the good guy hat. I always thought that was just a fun symbolic thing, and that there would be plenty of people who don't wear hats.
Right. I mean, granted, it is a time in which you wore hats outside, but still...
I mean, whatever. Maybe you also put in the clothes.
You also have to take your hat off when you go inside, so they just don't get any data about what people do inside.
Right? Like, no, they have secret cameras is what they probably do.
Yeah. I feel like the hat thing they didn't need to do. They could have just been like, yep, park's filled with scanners.
Right? I mean, we already know that the flies carry patches on them. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, like hats aside.
The valley.
They're scanning every person who's ever been in the park. Mm-hmm. So I assume this supercomputer, this mind dump, is going to have a simulation running. And I know not everybody likes to look at the, you know, next week on, but the implication being we might enter that world, that version of the world, which that was something I was not expecting. And I kind of love the idea of going from a simulated world of androids into an actual, like, VR-like simulation.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I don't know how much I could stomach of, oh, we're hosts inside the virtual reality. Well, I'm a virtual reality host, which is a copy of an old version of the host. I don't think I'm going to have too much tolerance for a lot of BS with this. But
yeah,
I did watch that next week on, and it does seem like we're going to get more people crossing paths in good ways. I was a little blindsided by the Valley Beyond. I mean, we'd known, Valley Beyond is probably what she thinks is behind that door that disappeared while they were terraforming the park. But to have it be another sort of like, oh no, that's also another virtual reality MacGuffin, made me think, oh, well, you shouldn't have even told me that. You should have told me it was something else, or held.
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty excited about having a different thing than just like, and here's another group of androids. So it works for me in that way.
It seems really. I really want to know. Definitive. We had the cradle a few weeks ago, and so that's what's getting me. Is like we had this thing just a second ago. So
this is going to be that with participants, not just hosts.
That's true.
Which is going to be interesting. Like, what are they doing to those simulations of other people's minds? I think there's a lot of cool ways that could go. You're right in pointing out there's a lot of bad ways that could go.
And then Bernard dumps Ellie, dumps Arthur, and is he also on the way to the valley? Do I remember that right?
I think that's the implication, is that he's headed in the same direction, which is interesting because he's going to end up on the beach. We know that from the future flash.
Sure.
And the valley gets flooded is the implication of the other future flash where they show
all the drowned
hosts.
Here's
where all the bodies are.
Yeah.
And they introduced a virus into Clementine And I assume that she goes out into the park and causes everybody to rush down and get flooded or something.
What did you think about that Clementine scene? I almost... It was weird for me. It was weird for me because I thought, well, they're trying to tell us that they don't care about the lives of the hosts as living conscious entities.
Sure.
And
we
so
know
they
that.
Just want to destroy all of them. Though, why wouldn't you just make the virus turn them all off? Why do they need to is this heavy-handed, like, no, we are the humans want the robots to die and war for us?
I think the problem is they've tried turning them all off.
Yeah.
And that didn't work.
Oh, so you got to manually shut off the power. Okay.
Yeah. I think the only way they feel sure that the problem is, you know, is to... And to them, it's like, yeah, we're just disconnecting the power. They're not real. Mm-hmm. But then the other side is, of course, that Maeve gets a file that from Bernard that Ford wanted her to have that gives her new special powers.
Yeah, it gives her admin access, which
she already had admin access, so I'm not quite sure. Like, maybe she's a super user now. I don't know.
Yeah, she got pseudo root. And and maybe she will find some way to toy with the payload that they put on Clementine.
Right, right. I assume so. Because she has feelings for Clementine, too, as sort of her daughter. Like not her daughter, but sort of like she's a mother figure to Clementine.
Yeah. And then let's talk about what's her name? Dolores and Billy. Not Billy. What's his name?
The other
guy. Teddy. I watched this episode today. I specifically watched it today, so I'd have all these names right. And we have a very brutal scene of Teddy, you know, being pushed further and further into this like weapon of war for her. But I, apparently the it doesn't stick and he lost himself. How do you feel about that writing him out?
On the one hand, it feels like a great excuse to leave Dolores on her own, right? Like, what we really need is Dolores to be alone in the last scene. How do we get her there? Teddy gets killed. Well, how does Teddy get killed? Ooh, you know, it'd be cool if Teddy killed himself. Why would Teddy kill himself? Ooh, I get it. He's a good guy that she made bad, and he can't live with the conflict, so he eliminates himself from the equation. Mm-hmm. It's logical. It does feel like it was reasoned backwards from needs rather than motivated, because we never saw anything that implied that new Teddy felt bad about being a killer until this episode when he let the Native American guy go.
Yeah, they really wanted us to believe that Teddy was this new Teddy. He's brutal. He's going to be her right hand. Until he wasn't, and we didn't get any internal element from him. Like that's been part of that's been the two ways that they've between how they've told Maeve's story and how they've told Dolores' story, where Dolores is very like principled, and so we know her principle, which is to get to where she needs to go at whatever the cost, and Maeve, who has a very emotional connection to all the other hosts and the other humans. Where with Teddy, we didn't get either of those.
Yeah.
And that's rough.
I'm laughing because Beatmaster wrote pseudo RM switch F Teddy in the chat room. It was Maeve. She had pseudo access. And then he said, oh, I'm sorry. Are we bashing the show?
No. Is that?
Get his bash.
I see.
Like, yeah.
Computer jokes. I'm ready for the next big shift in the show. You know? They've shown us a lot of really great spaces. They've shown us a lot of really great parallels, told us a lot of interesting stories and vignettes, but I'm ready for the shift. I'm ready for us to see the next step of hosts versus humans, because as far as I can tell, most of the hosts are like contained. It seems like Dolores is without an army.
Yeah.
And the humans are pretty much figuring it out, but we still know that there are a lot of hosts left to die. I don't even know that we get to the point where we were at the beginning of the season with these flash forwards by next week.
No, I hope not. That would be too much to happen. Like we need to be left with And now I kind of see how we might get to that point next season. I am still unsure why William is so obsessed with completing Ford's story. That is the one piece that I've been waiting and waiting and waiting to really fit.
Yeah.
And I'm expecting that to come soon. It may not come tomorrow, this next episode, but I'm expecting it to come soon.
Otherwise,
I love that Dolores is like, nah, screw it, I'll go alone. She doesn't think the Ghost Nation still has anybody left, so there's going to be a surprise there, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Bernard heading there, and then obviously the Delos people will be there, and we get a little showdown. Like, that could make for a good finale.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens to Bernard now that he at least thinks he's purged Arnold from his systems, because we are supposed to believe that in this dark period between the flash forward and now, that Bernard is directly under Arnold's control and does things that he was not even aware of.
I think Ford is a rootkit that you can't just delete. He's definitely infected your BIOS there.
Yeah.
Bernard, and he's going to show up again.
any other speculation on what next week's episode might be? Like, it sounds there'll be some showdowns.
I think we're going to have a showdown at the Valley Beyond, and then I think we're going to enter the Valley Beyond as part of that showdown, and everything else, I have no idea.
Man, well, one more week. I think this season's tracking a lot better than season one for me.
Yeah, me too, for sure. It's even though we have these little niggling things that are unsettled for me. Mostly, I'm enjoying the revelations as we roll along.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they're playing this much less horror than season one.
Yeah,
so
true. So, all right, we move along to Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City. Six strangers, entirely unscripted. All they get is a beautiful house and a beautiful automobile.
There are no scripts at all.
No. Sigh.
So
I am sorry.
So Tom, you and Eileen binged this over the past week and a half, 2 weeks?
Probably the past 2 weeks, yeah. It's funny. Patrick Beja recommended this. You recommended this. Mm. We did watch one or two episodes, but we just didn't keep watching it. And for some reason Eileen went back and started watching them and really got sucked in. And I think the key with Terrace House, I probably should have said this on Cord Killers rather than Spoiler in Time, where people are only listening to us now because they don't
have already
spoiled,
seen it. Yeah.
But you have to get two or three episodes in before you really start to get the payoff.
Yeah.
I went back with Veronica this weekend and showed her episode one, and I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of boring. Like, mm-hmm. you need it because you need to meet everybody, but you don't get the good stuff until everybody's settled into the house.
Right.
And started like trying to ask each other out on dates or having crises about goals. But that is the cool thing about Terrace House is, yes, there's romantic drama, but there's also a lot of like just career angst and thinking about what is your purpose in life. And it seems like they regularly talk to each other about goals and get mad at each other if they don't have clear goals, which is hilarious. It would never happen in a U.S. reality show.
Yeah, I think that was a really great thing about the best member of Terrace House, Hansan. And
Mr. Perfect.
The guy who was going out with Minori Yuchi, yeah. They kind of laid down the law and was like, hey, you got to figure your S out because you got what you got. And if you're not taking advantage of it, you're really going to be wasting a lot of potential. And you would never not you certainly wouldn't get that from a cast member on an American reality show. Right?
No, like when Tap Dancer first like pins the barista against the wall, not literally, but like I don't feel like you have clear goals. Like I was shocked. I was like, what does this guy care? But there is, and I don't know if it's just an element of Japanese society or if it's an element of youth culture, but there is this feeling of like, if you're wasting your time, that's disrespectful and we don't like you.
Yeah. Well,
and
especially in a situation.
That's not something I'm used to seeing. Mm-hmm. Usually youth culture is like, screw it, let's all party, right? Which they do also do.
Yeah.
Like those two are not mutually exclusive.
Well, I think part of it is knowing that the people on this show get into real romantic relationships, and that your role and your space in that house, you know, is partially predicated on trying to either better yourself or in, you know, complete whatever chapter you are in your life, or to meet somebody and to try to have a romantic relationship, with which most people on the show try to. And it creates it like it, it echoes a lot of the sort of organic human experience of like having chapters, of having movements, waves, and it's just so good.
Well, and I think part of what makes it good for me is it's in Japan, right? So I'm curious if opening new doors or even Aloha State are going to be as interesting, because it's not in Tokyo. And there's part of me that's like, ooh, I get to see this part of Tokyo. Oh, I've been to that part of Tokyo. Ooh, that food looks good. I'm far enough in opening new doors, and I'm not going to spoil anything about that, to have seen a little bit of the food, and so far so good. So there's a little travelogue element of it for me that probably isn't as big of an attraction to somebody from the region they're showing. But hey, not everybody's from Tokyo, even in Japan. Not everybody's from Nagano. Not everybody's from going to be able to go to Hawaii from Japan. So that element I do think probably translates a little bit. There's also just that, I keep going back to the goals thing, but like, there's more to these people than just let's hook up. Like, that would be boring. I don't like those shows in the US where it's all about like, I'm going to get in a screaming match over the boy. It's more like, well, yes, we would like to hook up, but also we want to make something out of our lives. Yeah. I feel like that is a very specifically Japanese thing, where they hold each other to a higher standard than most other cultures, not just the US.
Yeah. And we kind of saw the butting head of both of those ideas near the end of the season with Rico Pien and the guy that she was trying to go out
Hayato.
With. Hayato, yeah. And that is very encapsulating of Japanese entertainment, right? She's trying to be an idol, which is a very codified space in entertainment. And you have to be desirable, and part of being desirable is being available,
right?
even fantastically. And so to go on a show where most people try to find love, and then to try to hide a relationship, is
there's layers and layers and layers, right?
Yeah,
she's a high school student, for goodness sake.
Yeah,
I mean, she's 18, but she's a high school student.
And he's 29?
The age of majority in Japan just got lowered to 18. It was 20 when this thing was filmed.
Yeah.
And so
it's wild. Like, it is kind of wild that they included her on the show in the first place because of that. Though when we were at your house last week, and you had pulled up an old series of Terrace House, probably.
Yeah, there's some on Vimeo.
It was probably Boys and Girls Next Door, I think.
Well, all the seasons were called Boys and Girls Next Door up until the Netflix reboot.
I see.
They were all in the Terrace House in Shonen.
I see.
But they would have seasons where they would show episodes for a while, and then they would stop. And I actually don't know how it worked between seasons, but it was all Boys and Girls Next Door all the way through.
But in one clip that we had seen, like, there is a member of this very large idol group in Japan, AKB48. One of the girls who was in that group was on that show.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing on the producer side, but also on the person to be on the show, because romance is a huge part of it, and romantic capability is a huge part of the idol career. It seems like a...
Hadn't Hayato been in a boy band too?
Was he?
Or something? I might be confusing him with a different character, though.
I don't remember that. He was a chef, though. He wanted to be a chef.
I thought he had been in a, like, or on a TV show when he was a kid, and then he had gone into being a chef later, but that could be...
Yeah, I don't
quite... One of them had been famous as a young,
I don't think that was him. I think that, okay. I think I know what you're talking about, but I don't believe that was him.
Okay.
But just the whole fact that the house comes together, right? Suddenly the relationship between Rico and Hayato becomes it's not just about them anymore, right? It becomes about, well, you're expecting the other members of the house to effectively lie for you and to hide this relationship for you.
And don't get me wrong, there are definitely points where, you know, as unscripted as it is, and it is, there is no script, you know, the producers were like, go in there and ask him about this right now. Like, you could just tell, because they sort of self-consciously walk in and sit down on the couch and like, so tell me your goals. You know, yeah. It's like, all right, you that was suggested that maybe you do that.
Yeah.
With Rico and Hayato, I was wondering, like, okay, the producers had to have known that they were sleeping together.
Well, the Verge just did a piece on opening new doors. And was, you know, I want to know so much about how they filmed this show. And there was just a little detail in that Verge article that was like, yeah, you know, they sometimes have to work around the crew's schedule where, you know, they don't film 24/7, all 7 days
a week.
Oh, no,
I don't mean they caught it on film necessarily. I mean, they probably just were like, well, that's weird. Are those two, you know, like when you're in any workplace, you just sort of pick up on
you kind of know.
And you're like, yeah. Wait, when the cameras are off, they act a little different. You know, when we're packing up the gear, I don't know. I feel like they probably knew, but they were like, well, if we're not seeing it, we can't say it. Let's just, you know, hands off, because they don't want to ruin her career. Maybe they buy into the narrative.
Sure.
About that. But then I'm going to guess that the Burns probably came to the producers and were like, I caught them kissing by the elevator, you know, and the producers are like, maybe you should confront them about that then, you know, like, I that's my guess. I don't know. I'm just wondering how that all went down, because I can't imagine that Burns would see that and not be like, duff, you know,
right.
Like,
immediately confront.
What do I do? Yeah. Cause they're lying to you. Do you know they're lying to you? Like,
Speaking of relationships, we have to talk about the fact that Terrace House is a transformer from the toy universe, because Minori and Uchi get in a relationship and suddenly Terrace House grows a room out of nowhere.
Okay, that's also, before we even get to the transformer aspect of that, which is hilarious. Like, really? Japanese room? Okay, although...
Which is a thing.
Although the Japanese style room may have been a thing in Boys and Girls Next Door. I have no idea.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It could have been a thing
which
that we didn't
know.
Which
would make it less weird that they didn't mention it, because it may be like, oh, the Terrace House always has a Japanese style room for the couples.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
And just assumed everyone would know that, because this really is like, they make lots of jokes about pop stars and previous seasons of Terrace House that just go over my head, because I'm like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah. But it just comes out of nowhere. It's like, hey, you guys are sleeping on the couch in the living room because you don't want to sleep in either other room. So here, we've made you your own sex pad. Enjoy the futon.
I guess that's where I was going to go, is like, I love that. The idea, there's just something so different about the idea of like having sex is not controversial.
It's awkward.
It's just the next step.
Yeah, but right? they show Minori and Uchi to the room, and they sit down, and they're left to their own devices in the room, and they're just like, "So, you're still filming? Are you still filming?
Can we turn,
you know, this it's the Japanese style room. It's great. That was such a great surprise about that.
Yeah.
And they were probably, I think they were the deepest relationship in the series.
Yeah.
In terms of length.
Which surprised me, because I really thought Uchi was a jerk early on, because he was the one making all the jokes about like, women should cook for me and stuff. I'm like, oh, he's never getting anybody. out with him. And then Minori seemed kind of sporty, and the baseball guy was there.
Oh yeah.
But again, it goes back to the problem with the baseball guy was like, baseball guy would have cleaned up in the US, but because it was like, oh, you're not really committed. Oh, and you missed a season because you're not committed. And I still see you drinking beer and snacking. Like, that's not attractive.
Yeah.
You know, you're not committed to your goals. You're a slacker. I turned Minori off. That was crazy.
Yeah. Well, and remind me how Minori and Uchi's relationship ended, because I was just skipping around at night, or today, and you know, I saw them kind of have the issue where he's kind of chiding her of like, hey, you were more productive when you were trying.
Oh yeah, well that leads to the meat incident, right?
Yes.
He chides her about not being productive enough, and then the next night she makes like, oh yeah, we can cook the meat the client gave Uchi. It's fine if he's not here. And they're all like, really? Is that okay? I guess it's okay.
They didn't even leave him any. What I love is they edit it so that you definitely hear someone say, well, we should leave him something, right?
Yeah, I think the Hawaiian guy.
Armand.
I think Armand's like, shouldn't we leave some for him?
Yeah, but just a couple of these.
Nah.
Well, and the commentators, the panel, are all like, why is he so mad? I mean, it's just meat.
I get his frustration though, right? Like,
no, when I'm watching the scene, I'm thinking like, these guys, he's gonna be pissed. Yeah. Right, this was his client gift, it's special to him. I don't think he would have minded sharing with the house, but he would have wanted to make that decision himself. And then when he gets upset, I'm like, yeah, the panel's like, why is he being such a baby about the meat?
And yeah, that was really frustrating to watch. And I get that you kind of, that's the more fun sort of take on it, is to kind of talk down about it a little bit. But I totally sympathize with him, which is like, you didn't save me any, you didn't cook
also,
it with me, you didn't even do it the right, they you didn't even cook it good.
Yeah, I told Minori how to cook it and you didn't even do it that way.
Yeah,
guarantee Minori did that to piss him off.
Oh really?
You think? Oh, guarantee.
Because
she
wasn't,
knew,
because it wasn't her who brought up the stakes originally, it was Natsuki.
Yeah, but she was like, oh yeah, go ahead. Like, I'm not saying she premeditated, I'm going to go in there and cook his meat.
Yeah.
But I think when it came up, it was like light bulb of like, yeah, go ahead.
Man, that's a troubled
and
relationship.
I thought they were going to break up at that point, but they work it out, they apologize, and they're still together when they both decide to leave the house at the same time.
Ah, that's it. I didn't catch that part. I knew that they were talking about like, well, you're about to graduate, so what do we do? Okay, the other thing, earlier on the season, because I thought this was much later until I realized that they were referencing it, the omu rice, the early part of their relationship of Minori calling Uchi a coward for not snapping it off at the end of a really nice date. You know, he's painting her nails and they're eating and he doesn't go all the way. And she leaves him the message on the egg rice,
yeah,
calling him a coward. And it's so good. It's so good.
So I think the only other incident, so we've talked about obviously the big one. Mm-hmm. That was the thing. I actually ended up having to watch it at the airport because Eileen went ahead and watched it when I was gone on Saturday and was like, there is a big event you've got to watch. And so that night I watched it on my phone and I was shocked. I was like, really? They were faking? Not like, that's ballsy. Like, wow. That's the big incident. The meat incident's funny. The omu rice is hilarious. But the yelling match between the two girls, and now I'm blanking on the names.
Was that with Natsuki, or was that before then? Because I remember Natsuki came in and was like very butting heads a lot with Minori, because she was a very boisterous sort of personality in Minori.
Yeah, she. It was Nachan
earlier.
It was Nachan, yeah. Staying home drunk, and being all anxious because she helped the other girl get ready for the date. And then when the girl came back, she kind of got angry about it.
Uh-huh.
I think it's after Minori left. I think it's the ballerina.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause the ballerina was only there for like a minute.
Yeah. I think it was the ballerina was going on this date and Nachan helped her and was all nervous and then drunk. And the ballerina kept saying, you're drunk. You reek of alcohol. And then it kind of cuts away from there to the next day. And all the boys are talking about it as if they saw it. And
yeah.
I actually went and looked it up. Apparently, there was even more that happened with yelling. And the boys had to run over and break them up. And Achan was saying, like, you're saying I reek of alcohol. You're trying to ruin me. You're trying to ruin my career. And they decided not to show that.
Yeah.
Which, again, I was like, that's the difference between Terrace House. The U.S. would have made that a special episode. Like, here they are.
It's own thing. Yeah. Yeah. The element of, you know, because the show was running for such a long time and it had such an ability to create, you know, brands out of these people who were on it. It's you know, a big deal if you come across looking poorly on
yeah.
it. And
well, and I like that, you know, they want a little controversy. They want it to be interesting, but they're not trying to be lurid.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the best episodes were when Hansan had kind of gotten everybody to just help each other by getting them to help with the projects.
Yeah.
And they were all just getting along. It was actually after Najan leaves, which maybe that was part of it too. But they're all just like, there's less of the dating pressure and more of like, here are six friends living together, doing projects together and helping each other out with their careers. And that it did it in a way that I found compelling and was like, oh, this is really fun to watch. Like, this is pleasant.
Yeah. I rewatched Hansan telling Arman and the other girl who was there at the time that he was going to be leaving the very next day.
Uh-huh.
And it cuts very quickly to him leaving, you know. They say their goodbyes, they make this great scrapbook, and I was tearing up,
tears falling. Yeah.
And then the, you know, you cut to the panel and the panel is also tearing up, and it on Netflix they have a second language track, which is during the packages of the show you actually can hear the panelists talking in real time about what they're seeing. And so I scudded back to that moment of him saying his goodbyes, and it's the moment that they play at the end of that episode where Yu is like bawling and just losing her mind crying about it. And it's he was so great. He was someone who was so selfless. He really didn't even have many romantic attempts, right? I don't remember him.
He went on one date,
yeah,
and then said, "I shouldn't do this because my girlfriend doesn't like it."
Oh, right.
He had a girlfriend. We never saw her. We never met her.
Yeah.
And even when he came back. Remember he came back to visit on the final episode.
Uh-huh.
They asked him how his girlfriend was. He's like, yeah, I don't really get to see her much. She's busy.
He's, oh my God.
So interesting. Yeah.
He's just so great. He wants the best for everyone and he wants everyone to be better and to achieve their real life
goals.
That
was the thing. It's like Tap wanted the best for everyone, but he wanted to push them into doing it. Whereas Hansan was like, let me think about you and why you do what you do. And if there's a way I can help, I will do that.
I mean, when he told Arman, you're not supposed to be a firefighter. You're just supposed to stay this happy guy.
Yeah. And I think that's fine.
And
I think that's you. Like, yeah,
it's right. You get it. Like,
yeah,
he's not going to be some big career guy, but he's going to be a really happy dude.
Yeah. He's going to find his way.
Yeah.
Doing whatever it is he does. Like, then he shouldn't be ashamed of that. Yeah. So good.
So good. I'm trying to think, is there anything else? Like, a really great cast, I think. I love...
Well, and another thing about Terrace House that I love that I didn't expect is the revolving part really keeps you interested because you get to know characters. And in a lot of reality shows, that's it. Those are the characters you have for the entire season and you can get bored with them.
Yeah.
This way, it's like you always know, oh, there's an exit strategy. Like, they could decide to move. Arman stays, like, he's the first newbie to come after the first original six.
And he stays
all the way to the
time.
End.
Which is so great. He's
but
just
like you
being
said, the ballerina's
bump.
There for a hot minute. It's like, oh, I'm going pro. I guess I better leave. Like,
yeah.
It's
I loved Arman. And he eventually gets in a relationship with Masa.
Yeah,
and
right at the end.
That's so great for him too, because he does deserve he you know, he tries a few times.
I think Hansan helping him be comfortable with who he is allowed him to be able to talk to Masako in a way that was like, I just want to do what will let us try this. That she understood and was like, I think you won me over. That was really cool too.
Their date on the boat where she's like, well, you know, the show's almost over. You're going to go to Hawaii for a minute. You know, are we going to be long distance? And him saying, like, it is a different Armand that says, if it means putting it off or moving things around, I want to make this work because I care. It's like, that's inspired. That is inspired Armand. And that's,
and in the finale, he ends up saying, nah, I'm going to be gone a little longer. And she's like, yeah, but we talked it out and I know why, and it's fine.
Yeah. It's, I have so much love for this. This series especially just had so many really great people on it. And I'm excited that you guys are starting to watch Opening New Doors. Opening New Doors has some very sweet, beautiful moments. Like, Opening New Doors doesn't have too many huge conflicts yet.
Uh-huh.
But it has some very strong and shocking but great relationships.
Yeah, that the cook guy already, the 18-year-old, he is...
Oh yeah. My god.
We're not spoiling Opening New Doors, so I'm not gonna say anymore.
We have to talk about this later though, Tom.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The other thing I want to mention isn't related particularly to the show itself, but
sure.
When I was catching up with Eileen, I was at the airport for the last two episodes. And as is good practice, when you are on public Wi-Fi, you should always run a VPN.
Mm.
Accidentally, my VPN happened to be set to Japan.
Oops.
Which meant that I got the Japanese versions with the Japanese music.
Oh, right. Because the Japanese version, if people don't know, comes out week after week. And they have what I believe is a deal between Fuji and Jazzrak, which lets them use licensed music, including their Taylor Swift theme songs every year.
It's a Taylor Swift theme song for Boys and Girls in the City and Opening New Doors. I haven't checked Aloha State, but...
I believe it does, too.
Yeah. So I was like... It changes the tone of that show considerably, because in America we're getting, you know, all these dreams are so weird, oh, the day to day, but we've got hope, you know,
yeah.
And it feels very like uplifting. Whereas they're like, they're got, you know, we are the new romantics, you know, screw you. I guess it might work out. I don't know. And it's just, it was a weird, like, shifting of perspective just during those moments where the music came up.
Yeah.
Also, they do Snow Patrol over the credits.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's something I love about the corniness of the music library choices in the international versions.
Did you notice the one that is Every Step You Take by the Police?
I was just going to say.
With different words.
When they go and check out Hansan's presentations, it's literally Every Step You Take, but with different lyrics.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Like, oh, it's so good. Oh, I love it.
I actually want to go check the Japanese version and
see what they played.
Like, they actually just used Every Step You Take in that version. And
that,
like,
would be, they could. That would be incredible.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you're doing Opening New Doors, and maybe at some point we'll talk about some of the episodes that are already out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks everybody for hanging out with us. I hope you enjoyed us spoilering Westworld and Terrace House, and we'll be back to Deadwood next week. We'll talk to you then.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.